This podcast is sponsored by Monarch.
Lifesaver.
Game changer.
The best thing to ever happen to my finances.
The people have spoken. Monarch makes personal financing a breeze.
Monarch is an intuitive, powerful, collaborative finance app that can help you save, budget, and keep your financial life in shape.
With Monarch, I can see my account balances, transactions, and investments in one place, so I always know what's going on with my money.
Whether you're saving for your first home, thinking about starting a family, your own business, or planning for retirement, Monarch is here for you every step of the way.
Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Monarch and manage your finances more effectively. See what thousands of people are saying about Monarch, the app Wall Street Journal voted the best budgeting app of 2024. Collaborate with your partner or financial advisor at no additional cost. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Believe in Cal Football is brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Northern California, and is available on all major platforms: iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, you name it. Believe in Cal Football is also brought to you by Oeste Bar, Cafe, and Rooftop, located downtown Oakland, and the QL Gaming Group. Check out their betting boards at betql.co. Hey, what is up, Bay Area? It's your boy, GPS on the mic, and I'm back with Kevin Riley, and this is Believe in Cal Football on the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network in the Bay Area, and we are back and excited to talk with you. Kevin, how you doing?
Doing great. Great weekend of football, watching the Big Ten, and just a couple weeks away from Pac-12.
A lot of football this weekend. We got a lot to talk to, and as you just mentioned, even more exciting, we're getting closer and closer to that Pac-12 start date of November 6th. Of course, the Bears, we're going to go against UW November 7th at Memorial Stadium.
Yeah, and just released, it is the night game. So Pac-12 After Dark is back.
Definitely excited for that. And speaking of that, I know sometimes the Pac-12 network is kind of one of the more like pesky networks to acquire. It has deals with some network providers and not deals with others. So I recently bought a Samsung TV, a new one, obviously, and it came already embedded with the Pac-12 network. So since I've had that TV, I've been able to catch some pretty good games. Obviously, since football hasn't started, they're playing a lot of classics. And I'll tell you one I caught the other day. I started my football week on Friday this week. Friday night, I caught a classic, 2003, Cal versus Utah. And I'm pretty sure this game is like the emergence of Aaron Rodgers, because to start the game was Reggie Robertson for Cal, and he was going head-to-head with, of course, Alex Smith at the time. Didn't really go so well with Reggie Robertson through the first quarter. They made the move to Aaron Rodgers, and I have a feeling the rest was history from there.
That sounds accurate. I've actually never watched that game, but I know from a couple guys that were there during that time that said that was the changing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool just because I was kind of randomly searching through the TV, and that's when I discovered that it already had Pac-12 Network. And sure enough, what was playing at the time was this game here. And as I was saying, back in 2003, Alex Smith is probably the bee's knees in the NCAA at the time. Of course, we know how the story with him and Rodgers continues to play out. But yeah, it was a highly contested game. Utah was a top team in the Mountain West, a top team in all of college football. And Reggie Robertson, although he was a talented player, he really couldn't seem to move anything with the offense. Rodgers came in, and the whole offense looked completely different. Just the throws he can make, what he allows you to do. And as we just said, I think they never looked back from there. I will say Alex Smith and the Utes do end up winning that game. Sad ending, but it's just kind of cool to see that progression and then to know everything that ensued after that between those two quarterbacks and just in general kind of with that draft class.
Yeah, I know Reggie was a great teammate and a great quarterback, but Aaron is one of those once-in-a-lifetime quarterbacks. And you know, from practice, it's probably hard to keep a guy off the field when he shows you every single day what he can do. And it was just one of those things that coach decided to make the switch, and the rest is history, like I said, because Aaron's just phenomenal. Still
yeah,
is.
The things he does, and even the things he says sometimes, like that guy is just on another level, on more level than one. So,
yeah,
you know, we love covering the guy, love talking about him. Speaking of quarterbacks, why don't we talk about our current signal caller here at Cal, Chase Garbers. I want to say, without doing too much deep research, I feel like he's probably the most experienced quarterback returning to the Pac-12, and I feel like he probably has the most like balanced skill set of a pro-style offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Chase is, I think he has the most starts of all the returning quarterbacks in the Pac-12, and he really, like, I mean, I think everybody knows the Ole Miss game last year, it finally, like, clicked for him. It always takes a quarterback a little bit of time, and he just started seeing the field better. His anticipation was better. He was thrown with like more purpose, where I always thought he kind of floated the ball, and that kind of changed. And every game from then on out that he was in the lineup, he played a good game, and he's very athletic, so he can always extend plays with his legs as well. Besides him, I think he is one of the top ones, and then you'd have to give Slovis at USC. He had a great year last year.
Definitely.
And he has kind of superior athlete, but he has great pocket awareness and can move and make throws. And then Daniels kid at Arizona State is also a good player. Very impressive freshman campaign and being very smart with the ball, not throwing very many picks. I would say those are the top three guys in the league for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. That may actually cause a little bit of a rift in the Garbers household. I'm sure if Mama and Papa Garber heard us say that, they would take it a little bit as a slight, because they have not just one kid as a quarterback in the Pac-12. They may, in fact, have two kids calling signals in the Pac-12, with, of course, I believe it is Ethan Garbers, who may, in fact, win the starting quarterback job at Washington, who we'll see sooner than anyone else.
Yeah, that would be an awesome storyline. I know from their scrimmage, UW is high on their defense, and offensively, they're not there yet, and they haven't found a quarterback yet. Which usually means they don't have one they fully sure. are invested in yet, but also it gives a true freshman more time to get reps and show what he can do. Because that's the hard part of camp, is when you come in as a true freshman, especially with no spring ball, you know, coaches can't really see what you can do. So this has given him an opportunity for sure.
Right. It's definitely going to be a window of execution there for whoever's going to step up at UW. Definitely a storyline we're going to monitor, because that would be really cool if we can get a little Garbers on Garbers action week one. It'd be a little bit of bragging rights for Thanksgiving that'll come shortly after that. Yeah, I'm going to say I'm rooting for Ethan Garbers up north, just so we can have that plot going forward.
Yeah, it'd probably be good for UW too, to get a true freshman, get him all 4 years. I think the other guys are pretty young as well, but he had an epic high school career, so he probably has what it takes. And big adjustment. That would be good for us in terms of the first game, playing a true freshman. It'd be a lot of nerves going on.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering now, as I think about it, I'd have to do a little bit deeper research. Shame on me, but I wonder how many occurrences there is of brothers starting against each other at quarterback, either in the NCAA or the NFL. How many times that's happened?
Oof,
can't think of any times offhand. I know we were discussing earlier in the week, we have Jay and John Gruden, but I don't believe John Gruden ever played in the NFL. There's the McCown brothers, but I really can't recall them going head-to-head at any given time. Of course, we have the Mannings. I'm sure that they have any number of NFL matches under their belt. But, yeah, just something really cool to follow, and I'm sure no one is more stoked about it than Mama and Papa Garber.
Yeah, absolutely. Besides the Mannings, I can't think of anything off top of the head, but we'll get back with some information next week on that. We've got to do some
deep
research.
Definitely do our homework and due diligence there. Another piece of Cal news that I really should have hit on last week, but you know, no time is better than the present. CJ Anderson, after we mentioned his retirement from the NFL, he is returning to the California Golden Bear football program as an offensive quality control coach.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, especially him being a Bay Area kid as well. So it should only help on the recruiting standpoint, and obviously with his experience in the NFL, it's a perfect situation for him to teach kids what he's learned and also learn and hopefully have a successful coaching career.
And I think great coaches come from anywhere and everywhere these days. But the fact that he's gone through three different levels of football you could probably even say four if you include Pop Warner, but three different levels of Pop or of football in the Bay Area from going to high school to then shining at Laney Community College and then transitioning to Cal. So it's, you know, you feel that he'll be able to relate to a lot of a wide array of players with the kind of that background.
Yeah, and he played with some in some great systems and with some great players in the NFL as well. I mean, I can only imagine those years in Denver, what he learned from those guys, and then also being with McVay. So he probably has a strong football knowledge coming in.
Yeah, definitely great guys to absorb info from. Before we get any further in the show, for you folks out there who like to live a little more on the wild side, and if you're not in any range of a casino, please, I'm telling you, I wouldn't steer you in a wrong direction. Get to betonline.ag. Plenty of action going on, from game scores to game half scores to even player props. There is a ton of opportunity to be had. Get there now to betonline.ag and tell them GPS sent you.
Yeah, and so I'm betonline that the Bears are 4-point underdogs to the Dogs. So start hammering that right now before it starts to change.
And not to get caught with any conflict of interest, but I'm all over that. And you didn't hear it here, but, you know, maybe you did. So yeah. That seems like a good bet to me.
Oh, yeah.
Moving a little further through other Pac-12 news, there was recent news last week of the Holiday Bowl being canceled.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Was at the Holiday Bowl as a redshirt freshman, and just it was a great event. They truly hosted. The city hosted each team well. The events were great. It's sad. Hopefully they get it back next year. And I think everybody that goes there, San Diego is such a great town. And, you know, not having a Pac-12 team there was the first time I've ever been there in my life. And really enjoyed it. And it's too bad because it's one of the better bowl games for the Pac-12.
Yeah, I can certainly attest to that. San Diego is a world-class city. In fact, they have the nickname of quote-unquote America's finest city. I was lucky enough to spend a couple years there going to college at UC San Diego. And the town really got behind the Holiday Bowl because it was kind of like a weekend for not only the teams involved, because obviously you don't know you're going to be playing there before the year, but just the local San Diegans was kind of like a weekend they would always have circled, because the Holiday Bowl, as we were mentioning, is played at SDCCU Stadium, as I think they call it now, just out there in San Diego where the Chargers formerly played. And yeah, the San Diegans love it. It's a really big deal in town. There's a lot of cool stuff going downtown in the gas lamp area. So yeah, definitely sucks to see it go this year. Of course, we understand just the situation of life right now. We're lucky to even the fact that we're going to have games. But yeah, you never like to see the fact that we won't have the Holiday Bowl, because I think that is kind of a world-class game.
Yeah, it's a midweek nationally televised game. You know, the whole country's watching because it's a primetime game and in the bowl season. So it's too bad. And you know, like I said, hopefully everything gets back in order or we get it back next year.
Definitely. And I've shed all the tears I can for it. You and I know we're both tough guys. We're going to have to move on and just accept it. So since we're still on the topic of Pac-12, let's get back to our mascot wars. So for anyone who missed last week, we took a page out of Washington State former head coach Mike Leach's book, to where we pretty much have pitted all the mascots in the Pac-12 against each other to see who is the coolest and the toughest one. So at this point, we are down to 3 schools left in the North Conference, or North Division, I should say, and 3 schools left in the South Division. In the North, we have, from Washington State, Butch the Cougar. From Oregon State, we have Benny Beaver. And, of course, from our beloved UC Berkeley, from Cal.
Oski. yeah, we're going to go with the Golden Bears here, because Oski, I don't know if he's going to win a ton of fights, but the actual bear will. And this one, I think, is a no-brainer. You got to go. The Beaver's just going to hide in his dam. The bear's going to wait, eating fish outside of it, and then finally get his chance. And the Cougar is just doesn't have the power to withstand the bear the whole entire match. So the bear is definitely the clear winner in that one.
So what if I phrased it this way? Of the 3, since it'll be easier to get down to 2 instead of just going to 1 here, of the 3, Butch, Benny Beaver, and Oski, who is the one that is certainly not making it out?
Benny's gone. Yeah.
Benny's gone, and that's from a true Oregonian, but Benny is out. Yeah. I respect that. You called it how it is. So from the North, we'll have advancing to round 3. Next week, we'll have Butch and Oski going head-to-head.
All right.
Now let's move over to the South. We got 3 teams here. So we've got Ralphie the Buffalo from, of course, University of Colorado. We've got Tommy Trojan down south at SC. And we've got Sparky, who may be the biggest wild card in this whole tournament. Sparky, the Sun Devil from Arizona State. who out of those three is absolutely not making it out if all three were locked in a room?
I'm going to have to go with Sparky, just because it is kind of a myth creature, and I think the Trojan, with its battle experience, will edge him out, and Ralphie is holding strong there, so he's gonna be there. So I think him and the Trojan, with Sparty's out.
Yeah, I can understand that. I originally maybe saw it going a different way, but I can understand that because, as we spoke last week about when we kind of referred to Sparky the Sun Devil, he's got mythical powers that be, and maybe things that we don't fully understand. But what I do know is I've seen every Harry Potter, I've seen The Mummy 1, I've seen The Mummy 2. No matter what mythical powers are out there, there's always a book somewhere that can counteract that. So I'm banking on that. Sparky's not making it out of the second round. So going to the third round, we'll talk next week. In the South, we'll have Ralphie the Buffalo squaring off against Tommy Trojan. In the North, as we already alluded to, we will have Butch the Cougar going up against Oski the Bear. And that's where the mascot wars will lie from now. So moving on from there.
It's a good semis right there.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's kind of the final four I wanted to see. And I don't want to get too much into it now because I do want to save that for next week. But I think we can make a case for pretty much each one, but yeah, we'll see where the leaves lie after that. But yeah, let's hop into some of the college football action we had this past week. Week 8 in the college football season, but week 1 for the Big Ten. What do you think?
It was good seeing the Big Ten back on football, and it was like true fall weather. Looked like it was cold at a few games, and the big schools looked good. I think, you know, besides Penn State losing a surprising game to Indiana, which who knows if he was in or out. I thought he was out, but Penn State should have won that game by more. So it's their fault for letting Indiana take the big lead and stay in it anyway. Wisconsin and their new quarterback, Mertz, looked really, really good. And Illinois lost a lot of talent from their bowl team last year. But we'll see what happens with him, too. It'd be a first true big-name COVID player who tested positive in the Big Ten, being like the Pac-12 taking it serious. So it'll be interesting to see the protocols that are done with him. Ohio State. Looks like Ohio State, they're going to be the team to beat. And
sure, no surprises with Ohio State.
Yeah, and I would say Michigan looked good. I thought Milton was a very efficient passer, and he brings a different element to the running game. It looks like they replaced a ton of starters, and I don't think Minnesota's defense is as good as it was a year ago, but I think they have what it takes to compete a little bit more offensively, where they've kind of stuttered a little bit in the past. So they looked a little bit more explosive. So we'll see. They got Michigan State this week, and Michigan State lost and didn't look good, but I think they had like 7 turnovers. So that could be a game where they come back and compete a little bit better, but I saw the spread was like 24, but I think it's going to be a little bit tighter than that, especially in a rivalry game.
Oh, agreed, absolutely. I think every time the Wolverines and the Spartan gets together, it is always, the gap is kind of always bridged. No matter how high or low one team is, they kind of seem to meet in the middle somewhere, and what we're usually left is a pretty entertaining product. So I have that one actually circled for next week's game to watch for. I really like, I'm not sure who's the home team. I think it's Michigan State going to Michigan. So I think they're going to Ann Arbor. And, yeah, I think that's going to be a really great game to watch next week. Michigan was fun to see this week. They ran the expletive out of the ball. They ran it hard and consistent. And I got to think here. I'm a guy who's kind of followed Jim Harbaugh from even University of San Diego and then to Stanford and obviously his time with the 49ers. And now he's here at Michigan. And I'm wondering, is his leash getting a little bit shorter there? Because I don't believe he's beaten Ohio State once. And obviously Michigan hasn't had any, like, big time success. So what do you think about that situation?
Yeah, I think it's getting warmer. It's so hard. I think his worst year is 9 or 10 wins. But they've gotten drubbed by Ohio State the last 2 years. And we'll see. I think if they have a bad year this year, then he'll kind of be a little bit pressure on him. But, they've been consistent enough and close enough where I think you want to stick with them and hopefully Milton's the right guy and can take him to the next level.
Sure. He's a guy, yeah, Harbaugh, always a guy that I root for. I don't particularly have any vested interest with Michigan. I guess I'm kind of indifferent. in that area. But yeah, I'd like to see Harbaugh maybe get at least one win over Ohio State, but it really doesn't matter what I'm hoping for. It's up to powers greater than us at the moment. So yeah, definitely going to be interesting to see if Michigan can kind of take that step up further or kind of stay stagnant as they have the last few years. Another game I think was particularly interesting. We did mention it briefly last week, but number nine, Cincinnati, traveling to number 16, SMU, and they beat him pretty good. I think Cincinnati got out of there with a 42-14 win. Their quarterback, Desmond Ridder, he ran for 3 touchdowns and nearly 200 yards.
Yeah. I think we both mentioned they're both good teams, but Cincinnati's been a good team with good talent for quite some time, and I think that showed up on the defensive side of the ball and just ran the ball down SMU's throat in the second half with those big plays, and they just look like a complete team. Defensively, they're solid as well, and they got a tough matchup with Memphis this week, but I think Cincinnati will take that as well. So I think they're the group of 5 leader. That's the best team, and we'll see how SMU responds. You know, they played Tulane, who I thought looked like a good team, but Tulane got worked last weekend as well. So they have a couple more tough games, and we'll see how Sonny Dykes does down there.
Well, yeah. Now, before we move away from college football in this episode, another thing that I missed last episode, because I want to say it was the day we recorded the show last week, it was the 14th anniversary of Marshawn Lynch, quote-unquote, ghost-riding the cart at California Memorial Stadium. It's a moment everybody in Cal football history, I'm sure, is familiar with. We should have mentioned it. I apologize, but I'm mentioning it now.
Yeah, that was my first year. I was redshirting. You know, it was a game against UW, and UW was kind of in the dumps. They weren't a good team at all. I think they had a guy playing his second game. I can't remember his name. Whatever. But they kept with it, and they played well on offense the whole game, and it was competitive. And Marshawn really took over in the second half for us, and then that first score, and we got that pick by Dez. And I just remember running on the field with everybody else. Marshawn almost hit like 30 people on the team, and he's just whipping through everybody. It was crazy. Yeah. I think anybody else, you're getting chewed out, but it ended up being epic. And like I said, it's a big thing with Cal football now.
Marshawn doing Marshawn thing. And it even was a bobblehead last season. And I'm super upset I didn't get to go to that game to obtain the bobblehead. I'm on the, I don't want to say the black market, I'm on the secondary market in search of it. So if you see a good deal for that bobblehead, maybe pick it up. I'll Venmo you, or vice versa. If you want one, I'll buy 2. That way it's a pretty cool looking bobblehead, but
it is.
I'll keep my eyes out for it. Actually, now that I think about it, and I'm really surprised I never thought about this before, the one beef I have with that whole situation, and actually Marshawn as a local East Bay Area guy would too. Everybody refers to that as him ghost riding the golf cart. But, like, I grew up in the Bay at the pinnacle of the hyphy movement, and he didn't ghost ride it. To ghost ride something, you get in your car, you get it rolling, you put it in neutral, and then you hop out the car and dance around it. I'm not recommending this in any fashion or so. So I think even, like, if Marshawn were to look at that, he would know, like, that's not actually ghost riding the whip. That's just more spinning the whip at the sideshow is what he was doing, which that's fun too. But I don't know how. I've never noticed that. He didn't actually ghost ride it because you got to get out the car. And again, it's not a safe practice, but it is a part of, you know, my adolescence nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think he had the dance going on while he was riding it. Golf carts didn't stop, and you know how he was kind of skeet skirting.
It's absolutely a pop culture icon in the Bay Area and all of the state really now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to just get a little mention in there for that because I saw it all over my Instagram feed, all over my Twitter feed last week. Just kind of wanted to round back to that. Let's move now, though, to the NFL action we had in Week 7. And we had actually a pretty full plate of action. A lot of close games and some pretty interesting games for our teams with vested interest in the Bay Area. Obviously, San Francisco 49ers, Las Vegas Raiders.
Yes. NFC West is continuing to look just so good. 49ers completely bounced back after that bad game against the Dolphins. They look good again. Their offense is clicking on all cylinders against the Pats, who have struggled the last few weeks. And, you know, the Rams just taking a good win against the Bears, and Jared playing a very efficient game against a good Bears defense. So it was that's a good win for the Rams right there.
Yeah, I know in the NFC West, everyone's really just trying to keep par with the Seahawks, and that has resulted in everybody being super competitive. I mean, we saw how good the Cardinals are with their win over Seattle last night. The Rams play a solid game week in and went out and really do have a lot of talent. And as we just mentioned, the 49ers have tremendously bounced back after the embarrassing show against Fitzpatrick in Miami. This week, Jimmy G returned to Foxborough. They really didn't need him to do all that much. He racked up some nice yardage. I don't think he threw a touchdown. I think he threw a couple picks, but one of them was kind of like a garbage time pick at the end of near the end of halftime.
Yep.
They were efficient with the ball, and they ran the ball really well. And, yeah, it seems like they're getting back to what they do. Their defenses look better. I think one thing going for the 49ers is they're super good at linebacker, and that's actually one of the positions they haven't been hit too hard with injuries. Between Fred Warner and Greenlaw, they just fly around. And I think that athleticism and that speed has kind of grounded them a little bit.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, I think the defense is coming back to how they were playing last year. And they lost some key players on the D-line too, so still adjusting there. But Jimmy played an efficient game, and I just love Shanahan as offensive coach. That run scheme they have is just genius. You know, the new running back gets hurt every single week, and then
right.
The new guy in.
And the next guy goes for over 100 just about every week.
It's just like his dad with the Broncos.
Yeah.
It's impressive, and they're fun to watch. And they're like, you know, when they're clicking, and when you have a run team, just be efficient. It's just good football to watch, and you know the way that Cal was when I was there, and when the offense is rolling, it was good. Hopefully, they can keep it up.
Yeah, I think especially I'd like to commend Coach Kyle Shanahan. It seemed like he really, really was in a play calling groove, and we already know he's a very effective play caller, but. Just that game, he seemed to be pushing all the right buttons with the different long motions and rip motions. It seemed like nothing he could do on Sunday was resulting in negative plays. So, yeah, I feel like Shanahan really did his thing this week. Yeah. We can move on now to the Las Vegas Raiders, a game the Raiders actually came out pretty strong in. Like I said, they have a good offense. Their defense has been playing a little bit better. I'm sure John Gruden wanted this game extremely bad because, as we talked about, it was his first time going head-to-head with Tom Brady since the infamous Tuck game that no Raider fan likes to talk about. But the offense just seemed to stall, really, in the second half, and I have a feeling it's kind of how thin the Raiders were at offensive line by the end of the game. I know they took a couple injuries an injury at tackle and at guard. I know Gabe Jackson went out, or he got ejected. And coming into the year, I thought that was the best unit on the Raiders was their offensive line. So I guess if their offensive line goes, it might be kind of hard for them to operate. And Brady and the Bucks, man, they look super effective all game, defense and offense. So it's kind of hard to deal with that.
Tampa's on. Looks like he's lost age again. He's looked really good since that Bears game, and the team has looked good. I think I heard that stat. They had about 12 penalties against the Bears, and they've had 4 in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
And that's very efficient, and Tom has looked incredible. His arm strength,
it looks live.
I mean, he threw some balls that were incredible.
He looks like a young gun throwing it.
He does. And their defense, they have those linebackers are absolutely incredible, and they were the best run defense last year, I think, and you can see that, and that caused the Raiders some problems. But I think if you look at the last 2 weeks and all the talent that Brady has around him right now, they're I bet you if you bet it, look at the betting odds right now, and they're probably the favorites. They look really good.
Yeah, I think they're just total complete football team. We mentioned those linebackers, hyper fast, hyper athletic, fly sideline to sideline, can cover any wide receiver, tight end that's coming out of the backfield. I think Tampa Bay truly can be cooking with gas, and as we mentioned, Brady in the offense seems to be clicking more each week. I notice he's developing a little bit of a rapport with Scotty Miller. Seems like he's kind of taking on that Wes Welker, Julian Edelman role. It looked like Mike Thomas, he didn't throw to all that much yesterday, but obviously Mike Thomas is Mike Thomas, so that guy's going to be fine regardless. And then
like,
also
Mike Evans.
Oh, yeah. Mark Thomas is, I guess, worrying about other things right now. But yes, Mike Evans, yeah, great player. He didn't maybe get that many looks this past Sunday, but yeah, he's going to get his. So I don't think that's anything Tampa Bay will be worried about. And then Godwin obviously played great. So yeah, Tampa Bay, tons of potential.
And that's a crazy thing. I think, you look at people talking right now about Belichick and Brady leaving and the I think one of the problems with that is Brady wanted more talent around him, and they've just, you know, Scotty Miller has got a little more speed than Edelman, and Welker did, and you can see that him beating people deep. And then Evans, Godwin, Gronk kind of looks like old Gronk.
Right, Gronk was on point.
This other guy's name, Thompson or something like that, who's had a touchdowns back-to-back weeks. And then now them bringing Antonio Brown, so they have to have deepest wide receiver core in the NFL. And now the nice thing about Brown is I think Brady and Arians are the type of personalities that can control him, and if he's in his mood, they'll just let him go.
Yeah, I think I even heard Arians just mention that publicly, because even before the season, when kind of everybody was dangling the Antonio Brown question, like the media was asking every head coach about it. And when they asked Arians about it early in the year or before the season, he was very adamant that that would not be even a possibility. But here we are coming into week 8, and it is now come to fruition. So I think everybody in the world is curious to see how that's going to play out, whether he's going to be a productive receiver, whether he's going to be a superstar receiver like he used to be, or whether it's going to be a Jerry Springer show. So,
yeah. And the running backs are deep. Oh, they've got so much talent.
Right. And as we mentioned about Gronk is starting to look younger and younger every week. I had a feeling it would take a few weeks for him to get comfortable in the system again, and just after not playing for a full year, taking contact again. But Gronk looks like the Gronk of old, and I saw him and Brady continue to break records, as now they're tied second all-time for a touchdown tandem. They just tied, was it Steve Young and Jerry Rice, I believe? So only behind Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, Tom Brady and Gronk. It's almost etched in history.
It's crazy. It's a tight end as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when it's all said and done, he may have a very, very good case for top tight end all time. But I'm a Tony Gonzalez fan, so I don't want to go too far down that road at the moment. Yeah. You know, Tony put in his time for a long time, and the records are on the wall. Yep. So how about the Sunday night game? Last night we had Kyler and the Cardinals outlast Russ and the previously undefeated Seahawks in overtime. And both quarterbacks made a lot of tremendous plays, but ultimately it came to Russ threw three interceptions, and I think Murray only threw one, and that last interception in overtime is what did the Seahawks in.
Yeah, I mean, 5'11 and under game for the quarterbacks, and those guys are both so much fun to watch. And Kyler has a different quick twitch than Russ. Russ is fast and athletic, but Kyler, you know, looks like he's a wide receiver out there making people.
Sure, I think Russell looks a little more smooth, but Kyler looks more explosive and
both
ultimately quicker.
Yeah, both incredible throws. Russ's picks were that one in overtime kind of threw me off. You could see that they were like disguising pressure, and I think he just thought he was going to hit it in the pocket behind the linebackers, but the receiver wasn't on the same page as him, and he threw it short in front of the safeties.
Yeah, it looked like the linebacker was stunting, and I know they were sending pressure at Russ all night, so when you're getting pressure all night, you're probably pretty used to it. And right, linebacker just, well, that was one time they didn't send him, and he dropped back and made the big play at the time, and Arizona wound up walking away with the victory. But really good quality game. NFC West, super wild. The Wild Wild West. Yeah, it's it's going to be a fun next half of the season.
Yeah, and as we talked about after the Patriots-Seahawks game, you know, it's the same story, really. Everybody's scoring against the Seahawks. They need to figure out their defense if they're going to win a Super Bowl, because if they can figure out their defense, then they are the favorite because their offense is rolling.
Right.
Their defense can't put any pressure on anybody.
Right. The style that they're winning games, it is taking so much, I feel like, out of Wilson and Lockett and Metcalf. And they're performing at such a high level. But, like, to depend on that week in and week out, and then when the playoffs come around, I mean, it just doesn't always go that way. But Wilson and Lockett right now, I feel like, are more locked in than obviously anybody playing right now. But these guys, the level they're at, like, the distance of throws Wilson is hitting Lockett with, and Lockett just such a true pair of hands. They're really something to see.
Yeah, and it's unique ways. Some of those loft and that, just, you know, the trajectory of Wilson's throws to him are impressive. You don't see it very often.
Yeah. Seahawks, you know, they're not going anywhere. We're going to see them. Will they be able to go all the way? Well, that's not really for us to decide or to even predict at this current moment. Can kind of finish our NFL coverage here. Let's get into Pro Bears. Hashtag Pro Bears. Definitely a better week than last week for our Pro Bears. I know last week we had a couple injuries. We had both Cal quarterbacks in the NFL not play very well. This week, though, a bit of bouncing back. So start on the defensive end of the ball. We'll run through the four of them very quickly here. From Pittsburgh, defensive end Tyson Alualu, couple tackles and a tight win over Tennessee in a pretty good battle of undefeateds. New Orleans, defensive end Cam Jordan, has two tackles and a win there over, I believe it was Carolina. New York Jets, safety Ashton Davis, the rookie, he's getting a little bit more playing time. He had three tackles this time, as I feel like the Jets defense probably played their best game of the year last week against Buffalo, but ultimately they did lose a close one to their division rival. And lastly, of our defensive pro Bears, the Washington football team head coach, you bet it, Ron Rivera, gets a big win over Big D, their most arch rival, and his defense looked really, really good. They held Dallas to a mere field goal, and on top of that, Ron Rivera, he finished his cancer treatment, as I'm told. So
yeah, I was gonna say, Ron Rivera, he rang the bell for his cancer and then got a great win. Really cool to see. It was good to see Washington play a complete football game, and you know, and they made a couple quarterback switches year. And Kyle Allen, just played efficient. I think if some teams score on him, they're going to have to ask him to do more. But like I said, how the defense played, it was a great win.
Yeah, definitely. I think the sample size with Allen isn't quite large enough yet to fully know what we can expect from him. But yeah, he managed that game very well. And as we were saying, the defense put the Washington football team in a good position. And I know this is a organization that's catching a lot of flack right now, and they're going through definitely a transitory time, but you know, it's our guy, Ron Rivera. We're always going to look out for him. Just, he's a top-notch guy, top-notch coach, and we love to hear that he has won his battle with cancer.
Yep, and they're, I think, tied for first in the division. So
you are technically right. And so as wild as the West is going to be, or as wild as the West will be, the East is certainly wild as well, just in a different kind of wild.
I think we're going to have our first like 5-win team go to the playoffs. Yeah.
That will be a hoot. But, you know, the rules state somebody from the division's got to win the division, and they're going to get a ticket to the playoffs. So, yeah, can't argue with that. But it is a bit odd when all four teams in the NFC West are probably better than the four teams in the AFC West, but or the, sorry, the NFC East. But let's move on here in the Pro Bears section. We'll go to the guys on the offensive ball, starting with the Thursday night game, actually. Philadelphia tight end Richard Rodgers, 6 catches for 85 and a very quality win over the New York football Giants. And Rodgers really, and I don't want to get confused with Aaron, but Richard Rodgers seems like he's really starting to be a key cog for Philadelphia now that Ertz and Goddard are both tight ends on the IR.
Yeah, no, it's really cool to see. I mean, Richard Rodgers, I know, was a guy who came in, everybody was so excited about a Cal, and he showed what he could do. And he's had a couple games in the NFL where he's done some good things. Rodgers at Hail Mary and things right, like that. But, yeah, I mean, he was always a great receiver. And I think the Eagles' offense is a perfect situation for him, and he's showcasing his talent. So hopefully he can continue to perform and give him a few more years in the league.
Yeah, I like to hear that. I like to hear that. And sticking with Rodgers, we'll go to Green Bay quarterback Aaron Rodgers. He bounces back after his not-so-great performance last week. This week, 23 of 34, 283 yards, 4 tugger duggers, 2 to his favorite target, Davante Adams. And Green Bay, they got back to their winning ways and really rolled on Houston.
Yeah, Aaron looked good, and that's kind of what you're used to seeing. Protection was a little bit better this week, and you know, Houston's not a very good team, but that doesn't really take away from having a great game. And, you know, they're missing Jones, their running back, as well, and they still played an awesome game. So glad to see Aaron back playing, you know, towards a, you know, he's probably top 10 in the MVP category right now. So just continue to do that.
Yeah, I definitely say so. Without the kind of one poor start that he had, Rodgers, another guy, just looks super locked in this year. I think he came in motivated, he came in with a plan, and for the most part, they're executing it extremely well. Also in that Green Bay-Houston game, probably the best performer for Houston in that game, hashtag Pro Bear, Houston punter, as we talked about last week, Brian Anger, had a very similar stat line, actually. 4 punts for a total of 205 yards, he had a 51.3 average, 2 punts that landed inside the 20, and he had a long of 68 yards.
Yep. Yeah. As we mentioned, he's incredible. So hopefully you can continue that and you know, have a Pro Bowl year and maybe get a little bonus.
Yeah, and you know, you never want to have the punter be your outstanding player on the team, because then it's like, well, how much work is this guy getting? If he's, you know, I get it. And Houston, they're another team right now that's kind of struggling to find their identity. So Anger is getting kind of a lot of work, but yeah, you know, we're going to shout him out when he performs well. You know that. Moving on from him, we'll go back to the Motor City, Detroit. One of your boys, wide receiver Marvin Harrison, played a good game. 5 grabs, 80 yards, and they got a very odd last-second win over Atlanta. I'm sure you caught the Todd Gurley mishap.
I did. Marv Jones is just a stud. He had a couple. I think he had, like, around 80 yards receiving. Great game. You know, that was so weird. Gurley kind of losing balance, getting in the end zone, and then the Falcons doing Falcons things and figuring out a way to lose a game. Good job by Stafford on that last play, shedding that tackle and keeping his eyes downfield and making that throw.
And finding his guy. And, yeah, I want to correct myself there. Sorry, I, of course, said the Hall of Famer, Marvin Harrison. But, no, as you corrected me, who had maybe possibly a future Hall of Famer, wide receiver Marvin Jones is who we were referring to. Hashtag Pro Bear, great player. He, always leaves his heart on the field. And, yeah, that was just a really weird game. But this year, everything's been weird for Atlanta. They have lost a game really everywhere, any way you can lose a game. And that, to me, is just it's a crazy phenomenon going on.
It is. I mean, it's just like ever since that Super Bowl where they lost that lead to the Patriots, they just kind of lost confidence. And I don't know if it's play calling or players messing up assignments. It's probably a little bit of both, but it's
perhaps someone cast them with a very, very ill-intentioned spell. But right, something strange is going on there.
The whole team,
you know, I like Matt Ryan as a player, but you know, it's not really my concern right now how Atlanta's doing. But it is strange. Sticking with wide receivers, we'll move to L.A. Chargers wide receiver. Had a hell of a game. Keenan Allen, 10 grabs, 125 yards, and helps the Bolts secure their ever elusive, only their second win. You know, they played some good games this year, and that's only their second win.
Yeah, I think Keenan's probably very excited to have Herbert in the lineup. Their kid just keeps on showing that
he looked good again.
Super talent, and I don't want to take shots at Oregon, but like, how the hell did we not see this at U of O? With this kid, they should have been a national championship type team. He's very impressive quarterback. I think he's, you know, on the way to break records for a rookie quarterback in terms of touchdowns and everything like that. And Keenan, you know, he was having a great game against the Saints before he got hurt as well. So it was good to see him back on the field looking
definitely
like an all-pro.
Yeah, that was a fun game to watch just because you have a couple young Pac-12 quarterbacks going head-to-head. Minshew, everybody in the country knows who he is now, gets a lot of publicity. I definitely think he can play. I think – I don't know if he's quite up to the hype that he gets, but I think Minshew can play. But Herbert, man, he has looked better every week. He plays poised. He plays productive. And even the games they've lost, they were all close games, and it just seemed to be kind of – strange things happening. Like Herbert, he's a ball player for sure, and I think the Chargers got a good one with him.
Yeah, and Minshew, he's been a great quarterback. He's played so many games. You know, I think he was a 7th-round pick or a free agent. The Jaguars are just an absolute mess right now. They're not good. Their defense isn't good. Minshew's kept them in some of the games. I think he's played pretty well. I heard, you know, that they might be talking about replacing him with Glennon, but I mean, Minshew's not the Jaguars' problem at all.
No, absolutely not. I think their whole defense was dismantled. The whole organization kind of seems in fritz at the moment. Who am I to say? I've never ran an organization whatsoever in my life, but it just doesn't seem like a productive, even just work environment at the time. So maybe in coming years they can get him a little bit more help over there, because as you mentioned, no, I don't think Minshew is the source of their problems, and I think he's the right guy to start for them.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the Texans, you know, they just getting rid of some of their top talent in the weirdest ways. You wonder if they're that big of an issue or if it's something else, but you know, you let Leonard Fournette walk away pretty much for free is interesting. And
His talents to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, you know, a lot of their defensive talent from the past few years, trading people, getting rid of them. So
sure, Ramsey.
You don't know what's going on in the organization, but what a drop from 2 years ago to now.
Yeah, I feel like it wasn't that long ago they were in the conference title game. But, yeah, the point is moot. The rest is history. why don't we end this week's episode here with our final hashtag Pro Bear. The most recent game just ended here on Monday Night Football. Los Angeles Rams quarterback Jared Goff, 22 of 33 tonight for 219 yards, two scores, and the Rams really just trounced Foles and Dub Airs under the bright lights tonight.
Yeah, like I said, a very efficient game, and the Bears defense is very solid. I mean, you saw what they did to Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago. You know, Jared missed a couple throws there, but they were more like short. I don't think I would have done much with him, but he made the throws when he needed to and looked good. And the Rams won another game. So I think they're tied for second in the league with the Cardinals right now.
Yeah, I think they're both at 4-2. And then obviously the Seahawks still on top at 5-1. And then the Niners at the bottom, still looking really good themselves. I believe the Niners are at 4-3. So yeah, extremely tight division. And I don't know how it could work out, but I wonder if all four teams could make the playoffs, since now there's kind of the extra spot in each conference, but there may be a rule kind of impeding that. But that'd be really interesting to see an entire division make the postseason.
I know, it would be interesting. I wonder if there's too many divisional games for losses to add up.
Yeah, we've
got to look at that.
Might be a mathematical certainty that can't work out. That line always sticks out to me when I watch the Titanic, and they ask the engineer if there's any chance they can save the boat, and he tells them, no, it is a mathematical certainty. She will sink. Like the whole thing about the Titanic, they're like, it's unsinkable, but like, I don't know, what year, that was like 1912. That was the year Fenway Park opened in Boston. So obviously technological advances have been made since then. Folks, Kevin and I both want to thank you very much for tuning in with us this week on the Golden Bear Necessities here on Believe in Cal Football on the Believe Podcast Network. Kevin, give him some words to have a fair farewell.
Go Bears. We'll update you at the last scrimmage of the year and watch some good football this week and prepare ourselves for the first game of the year.
That's right. Go Bears. I think this upcoming weekend should be the last weekend without Golden Bear football. Am I right?
That's right.
All right. So we managed to get through it. We, at a point, didn't think we would have a season at all, but look at us now. We are here. Kevin, as always, thank you very much. Fans, get ready. We're going to have some guests coming for you later in the season. And I know we're all ready for some football. So, folks, have a good night this evening. Kevin, I'll see you soon.
Sounds good. Go Bears.
Go Bears.
Believe in Cal Football is brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Northern California, and is available on all major platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, you name it. Believe in Cal Football is also brought to you by Oeste Bar, Cafe, and Rooftop, located downtown Oakland, and the QL Gaming Group. Check out their betting boards at betql.co.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.